Hi, everyone, and welcome to Bravo and the Brits, the podcast with a distinctly English take on all things reality TV. I'm here with my newfound, newly discovered, newly outed, in fact, fartphobic friend, Faith Richardson.
Oh my God, what an intro!
I appreciate that out of context, that might be a tough one.
I know, I was going to say, I mean, to other people, they'll just be like, sorry, what now? But essentially, to give some background information into this. So me and my fiancé have been together for 4 years now, 3.5, 4 years, and we still have yet to fart in front of each other. There's been no discussion of it, no reference to it at all. It's like we're both just pretending that it's not a thing.
I just think, I mean, I'm happy for you, I guess. I don't think I could ever get through more than a couple of months without accidentally farting in front of someone. It happens.
I was going to say, and you know what it is? It's that weird thing where it's like, it's not a thing where I think we're both grossed out by it. I think we're both just one of those people where we're just like, no, it's not for public consumption.
I mean, look, I agree with you. It shouldn't be, but, you know, nature is nature. God, anyway, to change the subject slightly, the government's just announced support bubbles for single people in isolation, which has got me feeling some kind of way.
I mean, it's been a long time coming. I'm so, so impressed that you've lasted this long without just being like, fuck this.
Yeah, I'm impressed too. I think the fact that I don't really have any like prospects in the Northeast kind of helps, you know. The guy that I was Zooming, we were talking about it and we were like, yeah, I mean, if we lived in Newcastle, we'd have maybe talked for like a week or two before we'd have met up, you know, if we could literally walk to each other's houses. So I think it's just by virtue of distance. But what's really funny is I would like to know across the nation, right, from the BBC alert coming out to the first text they got, how long that window was, because I think I got one about 12 minutes after that first alert. Someone that I have hooked up with just on a casual basis that was like, shagging laws are in then.
I love the conscientious nature of it. Like, oh, that's fine. The government said it's fine. Better send the text out.
I know. So I just said, yeah, I've been Zooming this guy. I think he's going to come down next weekend. And then he was like, oh, yeah, I've been Zooming a girl in Leeds as well. And I was like, oh, that's cool. What does she do? And I just kind of like tried to
move it along,
the conversation away from it, because he's nice, but I don't think. I'm going to just see how this one goes in particular.
Absolutely. I know. I'm very excited about this. You have to tell me everything.
That I will, obviously. I also got some more chocolate from him today, which is eat. But he did say there was meant to be a note in it. There doesn't seem to be a note in it, but I'm eating it all so fast because it's just here.
Oh, I'm the worst for that. I literally will open like a family size bar of like dairy milk and I'll be like, oh, I'll just have a couple of bits of it. I'll just absentmindedly eat the whole thing while I'm like doing work or something, and then I'm like, how did that happen?
I remember once I was walking, this was back home in Brussels, and I had bought like a massive like family size bar of chocolate that I was just eating straight out of the packet. I mean, I used to eat for lunch when I was at school, just a massive bar of chocolate and a tube of Pringles. I don't know how I was so skinny. It was awful. And I remember this homeless guy came up to me and was like, do you have any food? And I couldn't say no because I was literally eating this like mega size bar of chocolate. So I took the packaging off on the other end and I offered it to him, like on the other end where I obviously hadn't been eating any.
Yeah.
And he looked at it, looked at me, was like, ugh, fucking disgusting. And then walked off. And I was like, okay.
Oh my God.
Bit of a weird one.
I used to have such weird eating habits in school as well. Like, I was a really, really fussy eater, like as a teenager, like really up until I was like 18 or something, I was like super fussy with food. So every single day for dinner, I would literally get a bread roll and some butter and a donut, and that was all I ate consistently throughout the entirety of secondary school.
Hey, that is so It's just not. So I'm trying to do low carb dinners as well. So I'm trying to keep my dinners very kind of protein based.
And yeah.
That just makes my toes curl.
Honestly. I mean, it was that thing, like, I was on the hockey team and I was like, I used to like horse ride like 2 or 3 times a week. And we had obviously like 2 hour PE sessions like every other day and stuff. So somehow I was just like in incredible shape. But then also when I was going for the school bus at the end of the day, we would all go to the shop and I'd eat like 4 fucking chocolate bars and things like on the bus home and then go home and have tea. And somehow I was not an enormous child.
Oh, I tell you what, those were the days of good metabolism.
Oh, how I miss it.
Like, unreal. I was also doing a lot of dance as well, which probably has something to do with it. But
yeah, I feel like a lot of mine was horse riding related.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that works your core quite a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I have no core. On an emotional level, on a spiritual level, and on a physical level, I have no core. I'm just hollowed out. I did discover a really good snack yesterday, so I finally managed to get into my massive pickle jar. So for a lot of this lockdown, I've been a really embarrassing metaphor, you know, distressed woman can't get into large jar. And then I kind of decided that I would try and leverage it with some knives. I mean, it's the kind of thing that if it was going to go wrong, I'd have bled out, you know, my apartment. Oh my God. I would not have made this podcasting appointment today. But I leveraged it open and then I decided I was going to have pickles and hummus, which,
oh my God, is
such a combo.
Is it actually? I'm not a big pickle fan, I have to say.
Well, you're wrong for that. That's all I'm going to say.
I mean, Greg, on the other hand, Greg will literally, he's like a pregnant woman, like there has to be pickles in the fridge at all times. He puts them on like everything.
I think that Greg and I are aligned.
I think you are. Maybe that's why I like you so much.
Yeah, maybe so. Tell Greg to try pickles and hummus.
I will. We've got some hummus in the fridge, actually. I'll set it up for him as a little snack and be like, tell me.
Yeah. I want the verdict. So we are back in the, is it Potomac Valley? I guess it is, right? Because it's centered around a river.
Yeah, I don't really know what it sort of like geographically is.
No, we just know that when they talk about the city, they're going into Washington.
Yeah. So I'm guessing it's just some kind of, yeah, like suburban valley kind of thing.
Yeah, some kind of outer reaches, manicured lawn, Stepford Wives-ish kind of neighborhood.
Absolutely.
So we have a fun opening montage. Giselle appears to be car shopping and she's testing out a car where the doors open vertically, which is truly my favourite.
We do love a car where the doors don't open in a routine way.
Yeah. Although, it's rolls, isn't it, where they're horizontal but the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah. I quite like a Rolls Royce. I hate Bentleys.
I do as well. I've got a real aversion to them. I'm not sure why, but I do like a Rolls. My friend Laura's dad had like vintage ones and she used to get him to just drive around and drop her off in them.
That's really cool. I like that. One of my dad's friends is like a Rolls Royce collector as well. And he used to use my student address to get like rare parts and stuff sent in England. And then my dad, when he was picking me up, he could like take the stuff back. So it would save him on postage. But it would mean that, you know, I'd get home from uni and my friend would be like, Lou, I signed for a Rolls Royce hubcap under your name. I mean, I guess, is that a mistake? I'd have to be like, oh, no.
No, this is my life.
It's just for Raina, it's fine.
I love that.
Then Ashley is in the gym. Ashley is in the gym, and then Robin and Juan are in the home gym.
Making their kids do burpees, I think.
I think so, cracking the whip. Charisse is branching off from her champagne and tasting whiskey. And what I love about this is they've kind of framed it as like a midday or morning montage. And you just have Charisse like straight on the booze.
Yeah. Just like pounding the liquor. Like, it doesn't matter what time of day it is. This is fine.
She was all of us for the first few weeks of lockdown before we realized that we still have to work.
Yeah. Real life has kept happening around us.
Yeah. And And then Karen, to me, is just all of us at the art gallery. She's like, it's bold, it's passionate. I have no idea what it means or what it's supposed to be. And I don't even think it looks nice, but it is expensive. And therefore, it is great art, which must be seen in my grand hall.
Yeah. I know. I love that she's like, oh, maybe it's all right for the foyer, but the grand hall, I can see it in the grand hall. Like, of course you have a fucking grand hall. Every time the camera pans out of Karen's house, I'm literally still shocked by how massive it is.
I'm so jealous of how much square meterage you seem to get in America for your buck.
It's crazy, isn't it? I follow an Instagram account called like Cheap Old Houses, and the price of some of these houses, I mean, I think they're probably in like not very good areas and things, but some of these fucking houses and the size of them and how like beautiful they are, I'm just like, what the hell? Like in England, you can't get like a 2-bedroom flat for that.
Yeah, it will mainly be location, I think, like all things. But, you know, just work remotely and then you could totally do small town life.
Exactly. Oh, I think I'd go crazy, actually.
Yeah, you're right. I think we'd get chased out of the town by like a torch-bearing mob.
I need routine access to bars and restaurants at all times.
Yeah, and art galleries.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I couldn't be doing with any of that.
Then we go to Katie, who's at the Malmaison, and she's meeting a sort of squat little man. And we learn that he's like the editor of Washington Life or a journalist with Washington Life.
Yeah. And I love that he brought her magazine from like 10 years ago. It's like, oh, what a kiss ass dude. Like,
when we put you on the cover, of course, we really kickstarted your modeling career. To me, it was just like, if this is some kind of Tatler adjacent kind of society glossy magazine, it just seems really odd that this man who looks, he kind of gave me like small town lawyer vibes, who just purchased his first suit for like his big newsworthy case in the big city, you know, he's gonna break out and, you know, show him what he's got.
Oh my god, yeah, I got that kind of like sort of like lawyery accountant vibe from him, 100%.
So we learn that Katie works for the foundation that she set up with her mother in memoriam of her father. And her dad's family story is pretty good. Actually, both of her parents' stories are pretty cool. So her dad's family sold alcohol during Prohibition. And her mum's, again, probably even cooler, was founding like black universities and black colleges.
I know. I literally loved these stories. I was like, what a phenomenal heritage to have. Like, imagine just growing up with those kind of stories.
I would love for there to be more detail around that. I would have loved for them to go a bit more into that as a story, because then we learned that they had like a torrid university romance and he was her teacher.
I know, there was so many layers to this story and to like Katie's background and her parents. I feel like we could do a full episode just on that alone and it would be enough.
Yeah, I think this also kind of explains why Katie seems a bit more eccentric and a bit more kind of quirky and liberal than the other ladies, because, you know, generally people that have parents that are a bit more quirky and eccentric and, you know, don't have these really straightforward cookie cutter lives turn out like that as well. And I love to see the wedding photos. Like, the veil was just the most retro 1960s thing ever.
Oh my god, wasn't it? I was so in love with that.
So the reporter guy is giving me, you know, Nick from Dragon's Den, the guy that found Moonpig. He's giving me those vibes. He's just got like a very pinkish face.
He's so like round in every capacity, isn't he?
What does worry me, though, is that Katie is depending on this article to communicate the nature of her and Andrew's relationship. She's like, as soon as this comes out, everyone will know that he's no longer an eligible bachelor.
Oh my god, I know. And I was like, most people just do like, you know, a kind of a subtle Instagram post where the person's in the background to kind of like stake their claim and mark their territory. And she goes full out with an interview.
Yeah, I wonder, like, god, it's been so long now since I've kind of entered into something. I actually accidentally went on a date once when I had a boyfriend, but I didn't realize it was a date, but he didn't know that I had a boyfriend. So he asked me for my advice on a business idea. And I was like, yeah, cool. Can we meet after work? And he suggested a pub and I didn't flinch at it. So we went and we met at the pub and then, you know, we had the chat. It was nice and everything. Then I was like, okay, listen, I got to head off. I got to go and cook dinner for Lewis. And he was like, what? And I was like, oh, yeah, my partner that I live with. And he was like, oh, shit. He was like, oh, I'm really sorry. I didn't realize you had a boyfriend. And I was like, oh, yeah, did you not know? And he was like, well, he's just nowhere on your social. And, like, I just have never seen him with you. And I was like, yeah.
Immediately, like, went home, took a photo, like, yes, I do have a boyfriend.
I know, but, like, that's the thing. If you're not one of these people that, like, plasters it all over social and shouts about it, you know, it's kind of... You shouldn't expect people to, I mean, yeah. How are people going to know, you know?
Absolutely. And I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, I think at the start of our relationship, me and Greg posted a lot more, but now we're just kind of like, you're just there. It's fine.
Yeah, like no news is good news kind of thing. I also think that sometimes when couples post too much, it's because they have like nothing else going on.
Yeah, I also think this as well. And I also think it's kind of an insecurity thing as well, where it's like relentlessly like being like, look, this is my partner. I love them. This is my partner. We're together, you know, hands off, stay away. Sort of.
Yeah.
It gives me like very much those kind of vibes. So.
And I am many things, but I am not insecure. So Giselle and Karen meet up to resolve their situation. Giselle is donning yet another ill-advised fedora.
Oh, I want to burn her whole collection of fedoras. They all seem to be getting worse as well.
Yeah, I thought the black and white one with the feathers from last episode was a particular low light, but this one was very Michael Jackson-esque,
wasn't it? It just looked kind of misshapen, like it had been like sat on one too many times.
So Karen states that ladies don't hold grudges, and Karen says that as adult women they shouldn't be embarrassing themselves by having public confrontations, and so they sort of quash their beef.
I mean, I get where she's coming from, but also she was the one that drew out this beef that they had in this confrontation. Like, Giselle set them up last week and she could have just easily had this conversation then. Like, I get when she said kind of like maybe it was like the wrong thing to try and get her and Charisse together, and I think we kind of said the same thing where it was like it probably would have worked better one-on-one, but also she could have just been the lady then and been like, you know what it is, it's fine, it's done.
Something that I really enjoy about this series is Karen's kind of selective viewing situations, where she will just completely blank out, you know, some areas and then actively buy into others. I don't even want to call it necessarily hypocrisy, because I have a soft spot for Karen just because she's a bit mad, you know. She's got a bit of Grey Gardens, sort of mad older woman with ideas above her station kind of quality. But she definitely kind of picks and chooses her moments, I think. And then what I love in the testimonials when she says, when I'm wrong, I don't mind saying sorry. I'm just very rarely wrong.
I know. So I love this for her as well. And that's just, I'm kind of the same. Like, obviously, I'm only sort of 3 episodes into these women, but I have kind of a very similar vibe with Karen, where I kind of feel like I can sort of forgive her for being bizarre and hypocritical, because she is just so kooky and weird, and like every time I think I'm kind of pigeonholing her a little bit, and then she just throws this curveball in, and I'm like, wait, what?
To me, it's great TV.
Absolutely. You can't have anybody that's too stable and too routine, because it just becomes monotonous.
So just an interior design note about this coffee shop. This entire coffee shop is branded in Tiffany blue. I think it's almost grounds for a lawsuit, because Tiffany owns that shade of blue.
They do. And I mean, it was very, very close.
Tiffany Pantone 1837. And it's 1837 because that's the year that Tiffany & Co. was founded. So there you go.
Incredible. I love that you just have this knowledge to hand.
Unfortunately, I know so much about colour from my colour related activities, and then I just end up with all these really pointless facts that I kind of just try and shoehorn into different situations, but I did feel it was worth bringing up.
Oh, it was absolutely. In fact, you know what's really funny is, like, not long after we'd started speaking, but before we'd hung out, I was looking at like events and stuff in Newcastle, and there was one that was the colour one that you did.
Oh yeah.
And I was literally like, oh, I'm really interested in that. And I clicked on it. I was like, oh my God, Lou's doing it. I was like, what the hell? And then I had this thing of like, if I go, I might seem like a stalker as well.
Oh, don't worry about it. That one was fun, actually, I have to say. But I had to, there was some like students that came from some random university, and afterwards they like asked if they could take pictures with me, which was really funny.
Oh my god!
And then I had to pose for like photo ops with all of these random students, and I was just—I don't know if it was for like a project or whatever, but
that
I felt
is incredible.
The fame. So then we go to Ashley and Michael, who are on a double date with Katie, and it is Andrew, right?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Okay. So did I hear this right, that Michael and Ashley had a 3-week run-up from dating to marriage?
I think he even said it was only 3 dates.
Ah.
Wild to me.
Okay, so can I tell you about a fantasy that I have?
Absolutely.
I completely have a fantasy in my brain where I don't necessarily meet someone, but maybe it's like someone that I reconnect with, or like, I don't know, maybe it's someone that's been like in my life, but not in my life in that way. Mm-hmm. And then some mad situation throws us together. Like, I don't know, maybe I have a lung collapse in Vienna and they happen to live in Vienna or wherever, and they come and see me at the hospital, and then we enter into this super intense love affair, and then we actually like physically go to Vegas and get married. And then, you know, it would obviously not end well, but then that would be like my like fun marriage, because basically in my family everyone gets married twice,
right?
So incredible. Both my parents were married before they met each other. And actually, so I was kind of vaguely seeing this guy in his 40s last year. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to my mum about it, and I was like, ugh, I don't know that I want to be someone's midlife crisis. And she was like, well, I was your father's. Because she obviously met him when he was, I think, well, no, they knew each other, but he was 45 and she was 31, 32 when they started kind of properly going out. So
incredible.
Yeah, in my mind, I'm like, that'll be like the fun marriage, and then like I'll have like a serious one down the line.
Yeah.
But I think because I'm so risk averse and I'm so sensible and I'm so rational, like I get off on the idea of doing something like spontaneous and like actually romantic. I'm not going to do it. Like, it's not going to happen. But in my mind, I'm like, oh, imagine.
I totally agree with this as well. And I'm exactly the same, where it's like everything I do is so like meticulously like planned and regimented, and like, I love the idea of spontaneity, but also it gives me anxiety.
I know, I have to work spontaneity into my schedule.
Yeah.
Like, work it into the life plan.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I have a window of this many years that I can be reckless before I have to dial it back.
I'm already having some kind of midlife crisis where I'm like, oh my God, is that part of my life already behind me? Was I reckless enough? What if I wasn't? Oh my God.
You just have to find new inventive ways of acting out.
Absolutely.
I might get some more piercings.
You know, genuinely, I've been watching videos of people bleaching their hair, and I'm like, is the time right for me to just have lilac hair again? I used to have it. I loved it. Maybe now is the time.
Oh my God, I've been thinking the same thing. I'm thinking of growing out my henna and not necessarily bleaching it all over, but going for like a strong blonde highlight.
Yes, I love that. I was thinking the same, where it's like my dark hair dye is like grown like basically halfway down my head now. And I'm like, when salons open, do I just go get the whole lot stripped out? Or do I just go buy a colour before thing and strip that out? And I'm like, could just dye half of it blonde, could just dye a big chunk of it blonde, and then just dye it all these crazy colours. And
can
I'm like,
do half and half.
I know. Do you know what it is? I've been wanting to do half and half for like over a year now.
So that would be so cool. I would love that. Right.
I know. I'm fighting so hard every day not to just buy some bleach online and have a go, because I know I'll fuck it up.
Yeah, but if you fuck it up, no one's going to see it, and you just dye over it in a dark colour.
That is true. At least I have that on my side, in that like my hair has been dark for like 8 years, so I'm used to it and I know I suited. So if anything's a disaster, it's fine to just be back to dark hair again.
Oh, I fully remember having a bleach freak out in my final year of uni, and like, because I was also just so depressed about everything else, I just cried for 2 days.
Oh no.
It's actually so sad.
Oh my God.
So we learn that Ashley heard Giselle calling her a thought, which is an acronym for that hoe over there, which is super gross.
It was so unfounded as well. Like, she literally had turned around to talk to somebody behind her. And then that was it. It was like, why? Why did that warrant her being called a thought?
But this is a thing. It just so clearly comes from a place of insecurity. It's like the oldest thing in the book of women being threatened by younger women or just other women generally.
Yeah, and it's just such a wild cliche. And it's like, ugh, be above that. Be better than that. Like, she's fine. She doesn't need your man. She has her own.
Like, this is the funny thing about Giselle. She talks like she's above all of it. And she talks like, you know, she knows she's pretty. She knows she's a catch. But then the way that she acts sometimes betrays that there's definitely still a part of her that's, like, not quite got the confidence.
Yeah, 100%.
Andrew really doesn't like Karen Huger at all.
He went in on Karen.
Petition to make him a housewife.
Oh, 1,000%. I feel like he's got all the perfect, like, bitchy qualities that they require. I mean, what did he call her? It was a haggard train wreck who's more stuck up than any of the other women. I was like, oh, he went there.
I have to say, though, I found this scene quite hard to focus on just on account of his chest hair peeking up above his shirt.
Oh god.
Then go over to Robin and Juan's. Juan looks like a really, like, hands-on good dad. I mean, aside from the infidelity.
I know, and I kind of just, like, I still can't wrap my head around their dynamic and why it works, but also, like, I do think he looks like he's such a good dad and, like, a really good parent, and probably, like, he, again, infidelity aside, like, he probably would have been a really good husband apart from that.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously had a really tough time growing up.
Yeah, I know. His little, like, the backstory bit was, like, so sad. I was like, oh, I almost forgive him.
Well, do you know what I think? I think they're obviously high school sweethearts, and I think that's lovely, and I think that's amazing. But at the same time, I think you miss out on a lot of emotional development if you stay with that same first person. And I think that it's very rare that you're going to grow in the same direction as someone from your teenage years. Like, you change so much from the age of 18 to 28, you know, and then probably once you get to about 35, you're not going to have that same radical change. I'm sure some people do, but by and large. And I think that, you know, possibly the infidelity had, not knowing the backstory, less to do with him and Robin's marriage and more to do with the fact that, you know, you do miss out on that entire part of your life if you're with someone from day one.
I agree. And, like, I always think the same as well. Like, I always see these things floating around the internet where it's like, oh, like, statistics say that you've already met, like, your future partner by the time you're, like, 21. And every time I read them, all I could think of was, like, God, I fucking hope not. Like, the people that I've dated and stuff were, like, lovely for that well, half of them were lovely, half of them were terrible, but, like, for that moment in time. But yeah, I'm already so different to that person. And it's the same with, like, friendships and things like that. I think sometimes people just hold on to these things and kind of ignore the fact that they may be growing in separate directions just because it's difficult to sort of admit to. But I think when you're in, like, your, you know, like, your late teens and your early 20s and really, like, most of your 20s, it's a lot of, like, you get to explore and you get to figure out, like, what you like and what you don't like and who you are, which I think is really important. So, yeah, I can totally, like, I can almost understand it on that sort of level for him.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, you know, it's not even about sex. I think sometimes it's just genuinely about, you know, having something different, having different experiences. So it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, he wasn't having a good experience with Robin, but there's always that thing of, like, you know, the forbidden fruit, or, you know, the grass is always greener. And I think you do have to sometimes see for yourself, you know, in order to perhaps truly appreciate or to understand what your priorities are. Like, you do have to go out there and kind of interact with different people in various ways, whether that's, you know, on a friendly level, on a professional context, or on a kind of romantic and sexual plane.
Yeah, and I think it is just curiosity as well. It's like, you kind of if you've gone through your whole life and you've never had anything different, it's kind of natural to be like, well, what if this isn't all there is? And what if there is something different or something better or something more suited to me and stuff? So whilst I don't condone the cheating, it feels like a conversation I should have had of like, maybe we should go our separate ways. But I also can sort of understand where that would be applicable.
I love how we're just massive Juan apologists because we're like, oh, he's a good dad, he's super hot, and he has a sob story.
I know.
We support his infidelity.
Oh, God. I just think as well, like, obviously they have a really good, like, non-marriage marriage. So for me, I think, fair enough if you can't get past it, but then kind of create a new marriage. But whereas now, we've said this before, like, their whole marriage is just being married without the certificate, without the kind of romantic side of things, which just seems really sad.
Yeah, I agree. I think they now have to kind of start rebuilding from day one, or just function as like a platonic family unit.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, separate bedrooms would probably be a pretty good start.
Yeah, that would seem wise. I wonder if they're banging.
I know. I thought about this as well. Like, it would seem weird not to.
Come on, you'd have to. I mean, look at it.
It's like, it's familiar. Like, you know each other. It's comfortable. Like, why would you not? It's not like you're getting it from anywhere else.
Well, yeah, we assume.
Yeah.
And we also learned that they didn't consummate on their wedding night, which I feel like is actually super common. I mean, you're drinking all day. You have to be social, which is super exhausting.
Yeah, and you've already kind of had this like full day of like, you've probably been up since 6 a.m. and you've got to do so much stuff, and you've got to be like dancing and like personable and kind of like switched on all the time. Like, it's super exhausting.
So we then go to Raven, who is going to her prom.
Oh, I know. So this isn't a thing. So I always see so many parents on TV get like super emotional about their kids going off to prom and stuff. And like, I don't know if it's an American thing or whether my parents were just like super devoid of emotion, because my parents literally could not give a shit. Like, they stood in the backyard at my friend's house. They took some photos. They had a glass of champagne, dropped me off outside, and was like, off you go, that'll be it. Like, it was just any other night out.
Yeah, I think it's an American thing that it's like a big life milestone. For my prom, so we hired a double-decker bus.
Incredible.
Like the English section, because obviously we had all of the different European sections, and like a limo, limos are just not my style.
No, same. Like,
they're just not. So we got this rickety old retro like decommissioned London bus, which was the coolest thing. I honestly thought I was gonna die. There was at one point where we were rounding a roundabout and just off like the dual carriageway, and I swear that we like we were on like two sets of wheels at one point. And then my parents drove to come and meet us. Then we had like a champagne reception. So we actually had the parents. It was at the Colonial Palace in Brussels. And our parents like came to meet us. We had like a champagne reception, and then they left. Then we had a sit down dinner, and then we had like a party. So they were kind of involved in it. They didn't just kind of like wave us off.
No, that's interesting. Because see, for us, it was like we had ours at like the assembly rooms in Newcastle before it closed. And it was literally like you would kind of, we all went to like a person's house beforehand, and like our parents came to that. And then
okay,
one of them would take us to like the prom and just drop us off. And then we kind of go in and do the full like sit down dinner and all of that kind of thing. But from what I can remember, I didn't really enjoy my prom very much. I remember being painfully bored.
Oh, really? Oh, so I nearly got into a physical altercation with someone, which I'm not proud of. Anyway, she's now a model in Milan, so she's the last laugh. But yeah, she was just being really off with me. And then the guy that I was seeing, and I wasn't really like, we weren't really that into each other, but it was just convenient. And like, we knew that we were going to break up before we went to uni, but we were just like, oh, let's just like keep seeing each other over the summer. Like, we're on fine terms now. But basically she had kind of gone up to him and said, oh yeah, like Lou doesn't even like you, blah, blah, blah. And he got really pissed about that. And then he literally like dumped me at the prom. And I was like, are you kidding me? Because someone came up to you and like told you that I don't like you. So then I got really annoyed. And then I went up to her and I like confronted her about it. And I was like, I don't know why you're behaving like this. Like really odd. And like, I know you want to sleep with him, but like, you know. Anyway, and then afterwards he ended up apologizing and we snuck off to the woods and made up, let's say. And then I had to go, well, I was home at 5 a.m. and then I was back out at 7 a.m. shooting a wedding. So then I worked until 2 a.m. the next day doing photography for a wedding, and my friend Jess came and did the videography. So it was quite the intense weekend, I would say.
Oh my god. I literally, so we had like our prom finished and then we went to like a club kind of thing afterwards, and then I don't really remember a huge lot about it, but it turns out basically I got spiked at some point of the night, and then suddenly I was in a different, like, so we were at the top end of town and suddenly we were down and I was in the cup but with like a completely different group of friends, and none of which had been at my prom.
Oh, and I remember, like, so scary.
It was terrifying, and I was like blacking in and out of, like, I would suddenly just be like come conscious that I was like doing something or like talking to somebody and have no concept of how I got there, and like it was the most terrifying thing. And I had to get up the next day and go to my shift at River Island, like literally still with my prom hair in, like hungover, obviously trying to deal with the fact that I'd been spiked, and I was literally just like, this is horrendous.
Like, oh my god, that's so scary. What did you wear to prom?
So everybody in my prom did the full like poofy dress with like the rhinestone bodice and the this, that and the other, and I got mine secondhand on eBay, like true to form.
Yeah,
literally full maxi length long sleeves, like high neck but completely backless, like navy velvet, like figure hugging.
Oh my god, that sounds so nice. Can you try and dig up a photo?
I will. In fact, I've got one somewhere. I'll WhatsApp you one.
I think we should put it on the Instagram.
Absolutely, that's fine. I was super proud of my my prom dress, and even to this day, people are like, "Oh, you really did have the best one." I was like, "No."
Well, I have to say, I really liked Raven's dress. I really liked the color, and I so appreciated the lack of sequin and rhinestone.
I did as well. Like, I am so about a much more minimal, simple kind of shape, especially for those kind of dresses, because they go tacky real easy.
Yeah, to me, this dress was very tasteful. And her date, Henry, arrives. He seems really cute, but literally all I can think is, like, surname Hoover. Like, that's the only thing that comes into my head when I hear that name.
I kind of loved what Karen and, like Ray and that was saying about not caring about it being interracial and things like that. And it was nice that they were kind of just like, no, like, it's just whoever the person is, you know, what we're bothered about.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's upsetting that that even needs to be raised as a conversation, but it obviously does.
Yeah, I was going to say, and it's clearly something where it's like an ongoing kind of dialogue, possibly like in the Black community as well. Like maybe some people think of it as like disregarding their heritage and things. I don't know, but it is sad that it had to be said. But I did also love that Ray was just there with his camera like it was 2004.
I know. Literally Ray and Karen trying to get their photo opportunity is just every parent when confronted with technology.
And I love that he was like, oh, I'm going to try and video it. And she was like, no, just take the photos. And that poor Raven and her date were just stood there pretending to put a corsage on over and over and over again.
I know. And you're like, why are you filming this, Ray? It's literally on national TV. Yeah. Like, it's fine. This moment will be immortalized.
Surely it's far better to have your own pictures.
But also, why were they so dressed up? Because I assumed that they were going to go with them, as my parents did.
Yeah, and then they just sort of waved them off in the car, and I was like, oh, maybe they just kind of thought they wanted to get in on the fun a little bit.
Yeah, maybe, or maybe just for the photo op. But I assume that they'd be going to a champagne reception. But also, my mum and dad seriously outdressed me at prom, so I'll have to take a picture as well. It's really hard having such like cool parents sometimes. It's a cost to bear.
No, that's literally the story of my life as well. Like, my friends love my parents so much that they will ask how they're doing before they ask how I'm doing.
Mate, honestly, I have literally come home before to find a friend, like, hanging out with my mum. And me being like, hello? Yes?
It happened to me on my birthday. I got out of the shower and I could hear voices downstairs. And my friend was just downstairs doing Jaeger bombs with my mum while I was upstairs alone.
I am obsessed.
I was like, oh God, okay, this is happening.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to being reunited.
Oh, I can imagine. It must be so long since you've seen them.
I saw them. I flew back on the 3rd of January.
Really? Oh my God, that's ages. It's like literally like 6 months.
Yeah, my dad did come to Edinburgh in February, but he did not come and see me. And he texted me like the evening before he was going to get there saying, you know, meet you at this restaurant at 6 p.m. in Edinburgh. But, and I was like, I have work. I just can't go to Edinburgh at the drop of a hat on like a last minute train ticket. Like, that's not how it works. I think sometimes in his mind, I'm still just a student, you know?
Yeah, like free responsibility.
Yeah, free to just roam and drop like 85 quid on a train ticket just for the shits and giggles of it.
Oh, the good old days.
So Robin is at a wedding dress shop looking to consign her dress. She paid $6,700 for it. That is crazy. And this is like early noughties.
I was going to say, I think that's what's insane, because like, I think for a wedding dress, it sounds crazy, but I think that's kind of in the average price bracket.
But no, I thought average was around 1800 to 2000. No?
No, no. So that's kind of like the lower end of it.
Oh my God.
It's insane. So when I went like wedding dress shopping and things, like my mum said she was going to get my wedding dress for me. And she kind of gave me a budget of like 1500 to 2000. I was like, oh my God, that'll be loads. And the woman was like, well, here's the dresses that will be into that bracket. And it was like half the shop. I was like, oh, okay. But obviously I'm going to get mine made now anyway, which will be much better. But yeah, you can get like wedding dresses are usually sort of about 5-6 grand. It's insane.
I'm really in the wrong end of the dress business.
Oh, yeah, you need to get on that.
And we see a flash of their wedding video, and they were 26. And like I say, it is really adorable, but I also think there's a lot of emotional learning that you don't do if you stick with that one person. And like, it's only a very small minority of people that will be able to self-actualize fully, but remain in that same relationship, I feel.
Oh, 100%. And it's kind of one of those things that I always think about, because obviously, like, when me and Greg get married next year, like, I'll be 28. And there is part of me that's like, oh, that is really young. But I also think that we have enough of, like, a sort of flexible dynamic where neither of us holds the other one back. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think, like you say, you've had that phase of kind of being more of a party girl and, you know, and it's not like he's an impediment to you traveling. You know, if you're not going to have kids, you can just be free, you know, do what you want to do.
But I did love their little wedding, like their video and like the photos that they did of their flashback were so nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you kind of, you know, it's like, it kind of made me sort of like almost like sad and nostalgic for them.
They're such a hot couple.
I know, I love them together. I'm so sad it didn't work out.
So we then go to a swimwear boutique where the ladies are regrouping, and Charisse is wearing like a train conductor's hat. It's very 2007. It's very Anastasia. Do you remember her?
Oh my God, with the big like pink and yellow gradient glasses.
Yes. And oh my God, they were always like boot cut jeans with like the corset lace up, but on the crotch area.
Yes, always. And they always had like some kind of rhinestone on the pockets.
Yeah, of course. A rhinestone fleur-de-lis.
Oh no.
What I love about this episode, I think, you're right, not much happens, but it's all just subtly kind of building up the different character profiles of each housewife through these kind of assorted interactions. And I don't know, I really enjoy it for that reason.
I do as well. And I think that was one of the things that I really liked about this episode, was it kind of, you could see it was setting up for like the future direction and dialogue of like where each character's storyline is going to go. but it kind of had a good balance of like a little bit of stuff happened, but it was like good fun. Like I really enjoyed this whole scene of them shopping. Like it was just such a good time.
Yeah, it doesn't feel kind of too dark or too heavy at this point.
Yeah, and it was just kind of some like light relief of setting up character backgrounds and things like that, which I think is really nice.
So Karen seems to have a bit of a soft spot for Ashley, and she even vocalizes that she's sort of seeing her as some kind of surrogate daughter because, you know, Raven's getting ready to fly the nest, as it were.
I know, and I always like it when they kind of take them under their wing a little bit. It's kind of like the Ramona and Leah thing in Roni, where it's like they clearly just have some kind of weird like mother-daughter dynamic, but it does work for them and it's kind of nice to see.
It's all very Freudian. Yeah. Actually, I'll tell you what my darling mother said on account of the chocolates that I was sent, and I was like, well, count on you to like traumatize me. She said, most men do equate food with love, as it all stems from mummy's breasts. ... Always revert to Freud. Either that, or he wants to make you fat and unattractive to other men. I was like, okay, cool. Thank you for the extremely traumatizing context.
Oh my god. God forbid it's just something nice that you thought, hey, you'll probably like this.
Look, ultimately, I have the chocolate. I'm happy, you know.
Exactly. That's all that matters.
Metaphorical teat or not.
Oh god, the word teat is like too much.
Mammary. What?
Oh, no. Awful. Awful.
Oh god, or the most traumatizing thing, men that refer to them as udders.
Oh god, it's the worst. There is definitely some kind of Freudian slip happening there.
Yeah, it was inexcusable. So Karen literally, I love this bit, she's just sitting in the chair and she just exclaims aloud, this is so fun and empowering. Ashley and Katie just parade around in their bikinis.
It was like a woman that had never had fun before.
Yeah, it was like a foreign experience.
Yeah. But oh my god, can we just say Katie and Ashley's bodies were phenomenal.
Katie was right to be like, three kids, oh, you can't fix it. I was like, where?
Yeah. From where? How did this happen? Although at least she had those blonde extension things at the back which weren't blended in properly, which made me feel slightly better.
Yeah, Katie's hairstyling choices go increasingly rogue.
Do they? Oh, God.
They do. They culminate in season 4.
Oh, I'm so excited.
It's a long run-up, but, you know. Also, did I miss, why is Karen shopping for Raven's swimwear wardrobe?
Yeah, I didn't get this either. Like, Raven's like old enough to be able to choose her own bikinis. Maybe Karen's one of those parents where she's literally just like, you're not allowed to go out in anything vaguely revealing unless I've approved it.
So Charisse and Karen are starting off on Ashley's good side, it would seem. They both seem to be kind of fans of Ashley and Katie, unlike Giselle and Robin. So to me, this is kind of the rift that's starting to form.
Yeah, I could kind of see this too. And obviously it sort of plays out a little bit at the whiskey tasting later on in the episode. But it definitely seems like Ashley's done well to sort of get her feet under that table with Karen. Because I feel like out of all the women, as wildly deluded as she can be, she's probably the person that you want to be on your side and not against you.
Yeah, she strikes me as the gatekeeper.
Yeah, and like she has the power to sort of fuck things up for you if she wants to.
Yeah, she can make you or break you.
Yeah.
So then Giselle is with her daughters and they're working out what to wear for the whiskey tasting. And at one point, one of the daughters puts on the high heels and just goes, I'm Beyonce, queen of everyone, which seems to be a pretty solid life philosophy, I would say.
I would say so. Although she does then like follow it up with like, I'm Ellen DeGeneres.
I know. And Giselle's like, I don't think Ellen DeGeneres is going to be wearing those shoes. We all know what that means.
Yeah. Oh god.
So we now head to the Washingtonian magazine party, which is presumably a publication adjacent to Washington Life.
Yeah, that's kind of all I could gather from it.
She's asking in the back of the car how she should introduce Andrew. They've only been dating for a year, right? Or
yeah, she said like a year and a half, I think. And it's like, Katie gets this kind of like wild crazy eyes every time she even says the word fiance. And I just feel
she does. It's so intense, and it's just not necessary for a woman who is like so gorgeous and put together and seems really kind of witty and sharp. It's really upsetting to watch her kind of pander.
I know, and I find her obsessive nature about this like so bizarre, because like you say, like she's absolutely stunning. She's obviously completely self-sufficient. She's not short of, you know, money and independence and all that sort of thing. And like, she doesn't need a man or a fiance or a husband or anything. So, and she seems so confident and sharp and funny and witty and all this stuff in everything else that she does. So I just find it such a bizarre character flaw that she gets so crazy and like neurotic about this.
I also feel like, because she says kind of later on that it's about society and they need to be seen to be moving forward for whatever reason. If this was me in that situation, I would never want to pander to a group of people like this. But say I did want to do that. To me, I would talk to my partner and I'd be like, look, listen, like this is kind of what it looks like outwardly. Buy a fake ring and just be like, let's just go along with it and just pretend, and like it doesn't actually have to mean anything, but we'll just kind of put this front up and just conspire to make it look like we're engaged.
Yeah, exactly.
You can be engaged indefinitely, so it doesn't really matter. It's not like a legally binding thing.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I never understood this thing where she was like, oh, like I think we should have been like married and like having kids and stuff already. And it's like, but why? It's been like 18 months. Like, there's food in cupboards that don't go out of date that quickly. Like,
yeah, it's just really cringy to watch.
I just find it so uncomfortable because I really, really like Katie in every other aspect except this one.
I know, and I really like Andrew. That's my type. So we go to the whiskey tasting and Karen is looking very apprehensive walking into Barrel. At this point, she sits at the table and moves the chair and she goes, oh, the chairs are heavier than life. Which was a bit of a dark insight into her subconscious, I would say.
I know, we went real deep real quick.
It's obvious that Ashley wants to get them out of their comfort zone a little. So she's pulling a Leo with the spa, which we can respect.
Absolutely. I kind of think sometimes it works with these women because it kind of puts them on the back foot. And I think if you're not the most, you know, comfortable or you don't know them that well, it's kind of good to do it on your turf rather than theirs because it just gives you the upper hand a little bit.
Yeah, I completely agree. Giselle says she is Gucci down to her socks and they're telling her to get down to the basement, which is really funny to me. And also reminds me of when I was teaching at a university last semester and I was literally in like a little windowless basement room for like a full day of some of my lectures.
Oh my God, no.
So they're all not massively on board with the setting or the whiskey tasting. They seem to really not be a fan of whiskey, which is crazy to me.
Oh, see, I cannot do whiskey. This is my idea of hell. Greg is like super into whiskeys. He has like a full collection of like all these different kinds and stuff. I think they all taste the same and they're all vile.
That's mad. Sorry, I can't believe that because you drink trash.
I know. This is the worst thing about me, right? Is that I cannot drink any sort of sophisticated drink to save my life. Beer makes me really unwell. Wine gives me an immediate headache. Whiskey is disgusting. All I can drink is like rum and Diet Coke and vodka and Red Bull.
You see, to me, whiskey is so similar to rum.
Oh, no.
Similar taste profile. No?
No. No.
Okay.
Although I have to say, like, one time, like a couple of years ago, one of my wisdom teeth was coming through and it sort of got like slightly infected and my face was really, really sore. And while I was waiting for my dentist appointment, I woke up one morning, it was like 6 o'clock in the morning, and I was like in agony. And I was like, oh my God, just nothing's making it better. And Greg was like, if you swill it with whiskey, it kind of acts like a bit of an antiseptic and it'll help it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. So 6 a.m., I was busy swilling whiskey around my mouth over the kitchen sink. And I was literally like retching. I was like, this is not worth it. It's horrendous. I spent the rest of the day just feeling like shit.
Well, what I did think was strange about this whiskey tasting setup is there's no one kind of talking them through the options, and Ashley's doing it. And even Ashley is having to shout to be heard over the background noise.
Yeah, so I made note of this as well. Like, it seemed like it wasn't the right setting for this. Like, I didn't understand why she was doing the whiskey tasting. Like, I thought the point was that she was there also tasting them for their restaurant. So I don't know why she was leading it. And also, I feel like Bravo could have just hired out that downstairs room to have a quiet setting.
Yeah, it was lazy.
Yeah.
And Giselle is just not having any of the whiskeys. But she does say she can't feel anything about halfway through.
And she kind of, her and Robin both start to get those slightly drunk, like Patrick Swayze eyes.
What do you mean by Patrick Swayze eyes?
Yeah, that kind of like squinty, like when people are like trying to see when they're drunk and they kind of get that sort of like half smirky kind of eyes on them.
Oh, yeah, so what do you mean by Patrick Swayze eyes?
It's kind of that thing where it's like you get like, you know, when you get really drunk and you're trying to see across the table and stuff and you're kind of sort of squinting, you've got sort of like smirky kind of eyes. I will demonstrate.
Okay, like, is it bedroom eyes?
Yeah, basically, but like the drunk version.
Yeah, I think that's my only version of bedroom eyes. Otherwise, I just look really angry. Like, I get the dirtiest looks just walking around town, and I think it's just because I look pissed off.
Oh, I do as well, but it's good because it means people that don't try and bother me.
Yeah, exactly. It's good to look intimidating. So Giselle and Charisse spark up the old argument from the other day, and Karen eventually intervenes and tries to force a reconciliation.
I know, and you can kind of... I don't really see why they're dragging it out so much. Like, I don't really see why Charisse is still so... Like, she's going like, oh, I'm not bothered, like, I'm over it. But she says it in such a dismissive way that it's like, well, you're clearly not over it.
I mean, they do kind of just decide to apologise.
Yeah, although it does come from the fact that obviously Charisse is just like, oh, I can see how Ashley maturely handled everything better than me and Giselle have. So, you know, I suppose I'll apologise to her.
I really think that Ashley handled this well. I think she apologised really gracefully, and this should ingratiate her even further to Karen.
I think so as well. I think it's given her like a huge leg up with Karen.
Then back at the Washingtonian party... I mean, I dare say any event where people are just wandering around with plastic plates is not that much of an event, but Katie is literally just walking up to random people and trying to invite them to her Casino Royale fundraising event.
I found this so uncomfortable. Like, I've never really done a networking thing because the idea of them literally, like, freaks me out because I hate the notion of just having to walk up to strangers and introduce myself. But she just seems like she's like selling something. Like, she's almost like a door-to-door salesman, just like hopping from group to group, like, hey, want to come to a party?
I know, just because she's a pretty girl, people yeah. are more on board with it. And then they're talking to this one group of people, and Andrew goes, we're doing an event to benefit children. And yeah. someone goes, yeah, that's a great cause. Like, yeah, children, just children.
Just generic fantastic children. Cause.
And so Katie tries to pull the whole people expect us to be married card, which again, like, I just don't think I buy, but like, I don't know, I'm not a socialite in America, you know, maybe people do put a lot more weight on it than I thought.
Yeah, I don't really understand the whole outlook of it, really. Like, I don't know why, I don't know if society does make them think that they have to be married, or whether that's something that she just feels personally. Like, I don't really know enough about like the nuances of like this dynamic, but it just seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I feel like she might be using it as an excuse to communicate across what she's actually feeling, which is just she's just desperate to breed with this man.
Yeah, and I mean, who can blame her?
Well, exactly. So we go to Andrew and Casey, who are back home, and she's in some like gorgeous silky pistachio green little slip dress.
Oh, I love the color,
and it looks so good on her.
I know,
it would make me look like choleric. I already have like a sort of greenish tint to my skin. My pale sallow skin. Oh, so she talks about the braiding fantasy from 50 Shades.
I mean, I need to
so, Like, clearly I'm into this. I had an ex-boyfriend who used to do my hair. I taught him how to curl it, how to straighten it. He used to brush it. I've also co-opted various men into doing my fake tan on my back, which, I mean, that's just useful.
That's just out of necessity more than anything. Like,
I've never watched 50 Shades of Grey, but I really want to because it looks so bad.
I know, this is my thing as well. It's like, I've never seen it. And I kind of got put off by all the middle-aged women who think that they're like super into kinky things because they bought like an eye mask.
Oh, there's nothing I hate more than like a cheap polyester satin blindfold. It's
it's
basically 112.
Yeah, it's basically just a dressing gown tie.
There are not many things that make my skin crawl when it comes to the bedroom, but one thing is the blindfold. The other thing is like strawberries and whipped cream. I can't think of truly anything worse.
I just think of the mess.
Oh, and chocolate body paint. Like, oh, no, absolutely not.
I feel like the novelty would wear off after you'd like done it, like maybe like you'd done like two licks and then you'd be like, well, there's a lot to go here. And now I'm more just kind of like a cat trying to lap up milk.
Yeah, and I think in your mind, your Shakira in La Tortura video.
Yeah.
Kind of writhing around and it's all very like sensual, but in reality it would just go like crusty really fast and
it would
and
flake and no,
like what are you gonna do, put down like a plastic sheet? Like, yeah, man, that's so like Berghain.
That just starts to get like serial killer vibes.
Dexter in his room.
Sorry, can you just get up while I put down this tarpaulin before we have sex?
Oh god, yeah, the worst. But doesn't it say in the 50 Shades book like she blushed as red as the Communist Manifesto? Like, I do kind of, maybe we should just do a podcast where we just read 50 Shades to each other, because this is one of my favorite pastimes, is going on the worst rated erotic fiction and reading it.
Incredible. So I have a funny story that's related to this. When Greg had moved into his old flat before I'd moved in with him, there was a guy that he sort of vaguely knew who lived there first, and he knew Greg was moving in after them. Now this guy had like a collection of like 60s and 70s like porn magazines.
Amazing.
And instead of putting them in the bin or taking them with him, he took it upon himself to hide them around the flat. And like, when I say hide them, I mean they were under rugs, they were in the oven, they were in the bathroom, they were like hidden behind things, like rolled up in things in the top of shelf. Like, it was wild. So we just made a game of it. It was like, literally, I moved in maybe 6 or 7 months after Greg had moved into that flat, and we lived there for about a year after that. We were still fucking finding them. We had a cupboard in our dining room that was just stuffed full of porn magazines.
But that's crazy because they're literally worth so much money as well.
I know, although there's some of them where like it cut bits out of the pages and I'm like, I don't want to know what happened to that.
Oh gosh. Well, do you know what? I think after quarantine, the bush is going to be back.
Is it? Is that a thing, do you reckon?
Well, I certainly know for like all of my single friends, no one's bothering to shave. No. I mean, why would you?
Exactly. I mean, to be fair, even for me, I'm just like, well, it's that thing. It's not relentless. So why would you give yourself the shaving rush?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I have been shaving my legs because I've been wearing the odd skirt or the odd dress. I'm here for it. It's a retro revival.
Yeah, I'm into it. Bring it back.
So Katie is truly thirsty for babies and marriage, and it's so stressful to watch. I mean, whatever sensual vibe they were starting to kind of get into with the hair braiding just completely evaporates. And I also hate the way that they're drinking large glasses of red wine on their sheets.
Oh my God, I know. Do you think she was trying to do the 50 Shades thing and then the hopes that she would be like, oh, maybe we should start having kids? And he'd be like, yeah, okay, this is a perfect transition.
Yeah, it's weird, but to me somehow bondage and like baby making sit in very different silos in the kind of sexual canon.
100%. I feel like both have to be intentional and they can't be in the same sentence.
No, they should not be combined. So in the preview we see Jamal, who is Giselle's ex,
returning. I know.
Returning, but not in a kind of serious, real way.
Yeah.
Charisse reaches some kind of breakthrough / breakdown about her marriage.
I know, I feel quite sad about this for her. Like, I don't really, I haven't warmed to Charisse in the slightest. Like, I kind of just feel a bit like, eh, about her. But I'm sort of interested to see this because I think it'll actually help me get to know her a little bit more.
Yeah, I think so. She doesn't make herself particularly likable. She acts like a knob, I think.
Yeah, and she's just so cold all the time. Like, there's no warmth or kind of personality to her.
But like you say, this might humanize her slightly when this storyline starts to kind of be unveiled.
Yeah, we can hope.
Ashley spills the tea on someone who's having a bankruptcy. And then, you know, just by pure coincidence, Robin and Ashley start to get into some kind of confrontation.
Yeah, I was going to say, this felt very connected to me.
Hint, it is. also, can we go on?
Sorry, I was going to say, I'm just intrigued to see Robin and Ashley go toe-to-toe because I don't feel like Robin has enough about her to sort of engage in a proper argument where it's like constructive.
I don't think Robin has the energy.
Yeah.
Particularly.
She's so monotonous.
Yeah, she is. And I just think Ashley brings a bit more kind of dynamism to things.
Yeah, definitely. She was a good casting.
Can we just discuss as well the highlight of our month from yesterday?
Wait, what?
On Twitter.
Oh my god, yes. I almost forgot about this. Truly. Never mind month. I think this is the best thing that's ever fucking happened to me.
Really, I got retweeted by Lisa Vanderpump once, but I have to say, nowadays, that's not much of a bag. Oh, yeah, and the whole Vanderpump Rules tea as well.
Yes, oh my god. Oh, we've got so much to go over.
I think we can save... Oh, wait, have we got Roni this Sunday? We do, right? It's the Sunday after that we don't have.
Yeah.
We can kind of go over it then, but I definitely agree with you when you texted me and you said this seems like the death knell of Vanderpump.
Yeah.
In its current format, anyway.
I was going to say, I mean, yeah, we'll get into it properly on Sunday, but I do think with everything that's happened and everything that's kind of going on, it seems like it was already sort of setting it up for a maybe could be end, and it kind of feels like this has probably just nailed the coffin.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how the OGs continue. You know, Stassi's got that big old mortgage to pay off, so she's gonna have to pull something out the bag.
I literally don't know how, because I mean, Bo ain't making that kind of money.
I tell you what, this whole pandemic has made me feel so much better about being kind of super thrifty and like not much of a splurger. Like I feel, because, you know, last year I had a couple of friends that were like, Lou, you know, you've got a salary now, like just start spending some money, like treat yourself, do this, do that. And my instinct is always like, no, I'll just put it in my savings and I'll be really good with it. And I just feel kind of vindicated for always erring on the side of caution with all of this stuff.
I know, and I'm kind of the same where it's like I obviously finished uni last year, but then was kind of just like flitting between like bits and pieces of work and only started really working in January. And I was so used to being so tight and so thrifty and stuff that I saved up so much money. And now I'm kind of being a little bit more flexible of like we're saying like stuff that's in the sales and it's kind of going to go to landfill or whatever anyway. I'm like, that's fine. I can replenish my wardrobe a little bit, but I've also been putting basically half my life on eBay.
yeah I think as long as you keep things moving, I mean, I've been doing the same. I'm almost doing like one in, one out, you know.
That's my philosophy too. It's like, right, I bought like 4 pairs of boots this week, so 4 pairs of boots has to go.
Oh, I'm still waiting on so many parcels.
Same. I'm also still waiting for a refund. I bought something from Nasty Girl in May. And I sent my parcel back for like a refund on the 28th of May, and I've still got nothing back. And everybody's just ignoring me from my Hermes. And it's like,
oh, that is so annoying.
And you know, you're like, I watched the tracking thing, and it says that they picked it up on the 28th, and then nothing's been done with it since. And I'm like, what? So is it just fucking sat in a van somewhere? Like,
probably. There's so much backlog. I got a load of stuff yesterday that's been sitting there since like end of March.
Oh my god, that's insane.
It's madness. Anywho's, we can deconstruct the Vanderpump Rules stuff on Sunday a bit more because we've already spoken our asses off for the past hour and a half.
Yeah.
So if you want to follow Faith, you can do so on Instagram at Faith_Elizabeth, 2 H's on the Faith. And you can check out her writing work and maybe even commission her if you have a writing project at www.faithrichardson.co.uk. You're still Faith Elizabeth in my phone.
Oh, am I? Adorable. Yeah.
That is your middle name though, right?
Yeah, it's Elizabeth Lucy, but yeah.
Oh, you have two middle names.
I do. I'm fancy AF. Oh,
I like that. You can follow me on Twitter at Louisa G. Rogers, and you can check out my website at www.louisarogers.net. I still need to get that Satanic Panic article up. I'm going to try and do that this weekend. And then next weekend, you know, I'm going to expand my social support bubble. So I'm going to be probably very busy, I hope.
If you find time to text me at all, you're not doing well.
I know. I'm just going to put my phone away for the weekend and just be held.
Oh, how the times have changed.
Speak to you on Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.